Hey, hey, hey. How are you, gang? Doing good? Feeling good? I hope so. Hope all is well with you. Thanks for being here. As always, this is Future Proof, episode number 140, to be exact. I'm Bill Sheridan. So glad you could join us this week. Let's roll out of the gate with this, shall we? This week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So great conversation this week. Really insightful conversation. My guests today, guests plural, that's right, got two of them this week. They are Jacqueline Tracy and Jessica McLean. Jacqueline is chair of the AICPA's Women's Initiative Executive Committee. Jessica is a member of the board of directors of the MACPA Foundation, which works to build a diverse talent pipeline and ensure the strength of the CPA profession for years to come. You can see where this is going. It's another diversity and inclusion talk and a really important one this week. We've got a lot to talk about, certainly about the good work of both of those organizations, but also the role of women in the profession, you know, why it's crucial that we work to expand that role. You know, there's been just a ton of research done over the years that makes the business case for expanding leadership opportunities for women, not only in the accounting and finance world, but in all professions. But a new piece of research caught my eye this week. You hear me out on this one. It's from Harvard Business Review, which made its case in an article titled "Adding Women to the C-Suite Changes How Companies Think." The researchers, quote, set out to explore these questions by examining exactly how firms changed their strategic approach to innovation after appointing female executives, end quote. And I'm going to read straight from that article here. It's kind of a long excerpt, so bear with me, but it's fascinating stuff. It says, quote, "The researchers were able to identify three distinct trends around shifts in firms' strategic thinking following the appointment of female executives. First, after women joined the C-suite, firms became both more open to change and less risk-seeking. In other words, these organizations increasingly embraced transformation while seeking to reduce the risks associated with it. Secondly, firms shifted focus from mergers and acquisitions to research and development. Specifically, Harvard researchers observed that when top management teams added female executives, they gradually shifted from a knowledge buying strategy focused on M&As, which could be described as a more traditionally masculine proactive approach, towards a knowledge building strategy focused on internal R&D, which could be described as a more traditionally feminine collaborative approach. The analysis suggests that this shift was a direct result of firms' increasing aversion to risk. And finally, researchers found that the more effectively female executives were able to integrate into the top management teams, the greater the impact they were likely to have on decision making. There were two key factors that could influence this. Number one, whether she's the only woman. So they found that adding female executives to top management teams only actually changed C-suite thinking in cases where the executive team already had at least one woman. And two, whether she's one of many new appointees. Now, they also found that larger shifts in thinking occurred when the new female executives were part of a smaller cohort of new appointees. In other words, if the firm promoted 10 men and 2 women to senior roles, they would see less of an impact than if the firm promoted 5 men and 1 woman. So then the question arose, now why is having women in the C-suite so impactful? The article goes on to say, first, a look at many women's paths to executive positions sheds some light on why these leaders might simultaneously court change and avoid risk. To advance to the highest corporate levels, many women need to walk a difficult tightrope. They often learn to stand out by promoting novel strategies in an effort to overcome stereotypes of timidness. But at the same time, the hypervisibility that comes with being the only one of an underrepresented group drastically increases the professional costs of making mistakes. And so they learn to carefully weigh the benefits of their innovative proposals with the risks of potential failure. And based on this common experience, one could expect top management teams to become more focused on balancing innovation with risk mitigation as more women join their ranks. In addition, prior research suggests that female executives are likely to care less about tradition and are more open to challenging the status quo than their male counterparts. And finally, the article says it's also possible that these changes are simply the direct result of increasing diversity in top management teams. Research suggests that having more diverse perspectives to weigh in on key decisions can make a group more open to change and more likely to see change as feasible, end quote. So a mouthful there. Again, that passage was from a Harvard Business Review article titled Adding Women to the C-Suite Changes How Companies Think. It was written by Corinne Post, Boris Lakshin, and Christoph Boone. And really, it's just more fuel for the fire when you think about it. Promoting diversity among your leadership teams, you know, it's just the right thing to do. Full stop, right? Beyond that, though, it makes undeniable business sense. I think it was Margaret Thatcher who once said, if you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman. And Bloomberg Businessweek, some authors there, they'd probably agree with that. They write, quote, as leaders, women rule, right? New studies find that female managers outshine their male counterparts on almost every measure. End quote. So this week, we talk about all of that and much more, right? Important conversation here about nothing less really than the future of our profession. Here is my conversation with Jacqueline Tracy and Jessica McLean. So Jackie, Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today. And I thought I'd get the conversation started with, you know, a little bit of like setting the stage, so to speak. A few quotes that I came across recently. These are all from Tom Peters' most recent book. He has a whole chapter about women and leadership and some great insights in there. But this one, the first one is from the New York Times. It says, research by McKinsey and Company suggests that in order to succeed, companies should start by promoting women. And then there's this is from Harvard Business Review. Women are rated higher in fully 12 of 16 competencies that go into outstanding leadership, including taking initiative and driving for results. They say that those two are typically ones that are most often identified as being more male type of competencies, but women are outperforming men in those areas as well. And then this one from Bloomberg Business Week, they say, new studies find that female managers outshine their male counterparts in almost every measure. And then kind of pairing that with a couple of data points here that I thought were interesting. Women-owned companies grow at twice the rate and create twice as many jobs as the average company. And yet, again, from the New York Times, fewer large companies are run by women than by men named John. So, I mean, that says something right there. And then this one that we see in our profession all the time, but I guess currently only 23% of partners at public accounting firms are women. And that number has been largely unchanged for about a decade or so. So a couple of questions kind of come to mind to me as I was putting those opening thoughts together. I guess my first one is, and Jackie, maybe you can chime in first here. When are more of the powers that be going to see this stuff and recognize the benefits of having more women in leadership positions and then actually take steps to make that happen? It just seems, when you read the stuff in black and white, it just seems like a no-brainer.
That's a really great question. And I think maybe perhaps if more people were reading these articles and getting this information, they would see the impact of it, because it's really a business imperative that we're leaving half our population out of the talent pool if we're not considering what we can do to attract women into our organizations, our firms, and retain them. Because we can do whatever we want to bring them in, but we also need to retain them. So I think when businesses see the business imperative that it is going to make them more money, because that's, you know, a lot of what the rationale is behind, and also maybe seeing that their competitors are doing it, that they're able to get the great staff, that they're doing well in business, they're getting the good clients, then they'll see, oh, perhaps this is something that I should or need to do.
Yeah, great thoughts there. Jessica, anything to add on that?
Great, great points, Jackie. I would also add that the pandemic has shined a light on the need for critical leadership skills, such as high emotional intelligence, compassion, empathy. And these leadership qualities are essential during a time of crisis, such that we're in now with the pandemic and have been for the past year. And as your opening statistics have shown, women tend to have more of those qualities. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I think we're beyond having to do more studies or more business cases of why we need more women in leadership positions within our firms and organizations. At this point, what we need is action with accountability or consequences for the lack thereof. And hopefully at this point, organizations and firms understand this critical need. As Jack had mentioned, this is business imperative to push women up.
Jessica, yeah. That's great. Sorry, because mm-hmm. when we're in a whole new world, the way businesses run, the way we do our work is different. So let's manage and lead differently so that we can get better results.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And back to your point, Jessica, about more action, more accountability. I mean, what should we be doing to kind of improve the chances of, you know, producing more women as leaders and getting them into those critical positions to help those organizations succeed?
It's the things we've talked about before, the mentoring, the coaching, and the sponsoring. And I've met individuals who have been, you know, partners at firms, and some come into the profession saying, I knew I wanted to be a partner from day one. It's what I wanted to do. And then later on, they decided they didn't want to be a partner. I've seen others that came in, oh, I don't want to be a partner. I'm going to do this public accounting thing for a few years, and I'm going to do industry. And 20 years later, they're a partner. Mm-hmm. And what really is needed is, especially for women, is that sponsorship for women that want to get to that level. The specific feedback that's tied to outcomes, because many studies have shown a lot of times women, we don't get that detailed feedback. We get that very vague feedback, and that is needed to get to the next level. So it really is about supporting and sponsoring women that want to get there.
Jackie, what importance of mentorship or sponsorship from where you sit? What are your thoughts there?
Sponsorship is critical to get women into the leadership levels and to highlight their skills. You know, certainly in the beginning of your career, you need a mentor to go and ask questions, to see where you should go next, to get pointed in the right direction. But to get into leadership and the high level of leaderships, you really need someone going to bat for you. And that's where all the studies that we've done have found that the women are lacking in someone who goes to bat for them. Most leaders who have made it into the high levels of corporations or firms have had a sponsor along the way who said, put this person in this position, you should consider this person. And most of those times that this person is a male. So we need more people to sponsor our women and to bring them into leadership.
Great points. And it reminds me of, well, I've heard a number of thought leaders in this area say something along these same lines, but the true mark of great leadership isn't necessarily the results that they produce, but the fact that they are building future leaders, right? A great leader builds future leaders. And I think you're both kind of pointing in that direction there.
Have you ever heard the expression that you can cross the finish line, but if you turn around and no one's behind you, have you really won the race? Yeah. You want to make sure that you're bringing people along with you to make sure you're filling the pipeline, but also so that everybody is succeeding. It can't just be you, or else it's not success.
Jessica, tell me a little bit about that type of support that you've received, mentorship or sponsorship examples. How has that helped you along?
It's definitely been beneficial. There are times I've doubted myself on the ability to for those stretch goals and stretch assignments. So to have someone in your corner encouraging you is amazing. Because there's times I may not have taken all these opportunities without that support, without the encouragement. Even as Jack has mentioned, having someone in that room to speak for me when I'm not there is also important as well. The help of people in my network. I know Jack has been a help to me in my past when I was looking for another position when I left public accounting. I've had many supportive women in my career and men as well who have helped me. And I know they have definitely made a difference. And all I can hope to do is pass that along as well. Like Jackie mentioned, it's the pipeline. And I love that quote, Jackie, as far as I look behind me and no one's there. That's a problem. So I wrote that one down. I'm going to use that one.
I spoke with Kimberly Ellison Taylor not too long ago. And the word she uses is allyship. That idea of having an ally, somebody in your corner who, as you said, Jessica, who can speak for you when you're not in the room or whatever the case may be. I love that thought of, allies who are kind of helping us along in our paths. So great thoughts there. Another question that came to mind is making partner or managing partner or reaching those kind of highest levels in the profession, something that most women even aspire to. I mean, we talk about these numbers as they're black and white and there's an easy answer, but is there more to this conversation, more to consider here than just, you must become a leader?
I think there is. When I think women look at what the traditional partnership looks like or what had been all along, I don't think it's as attractive to as many women as we would hope it to be. For whatever the reasons, for the less of flexibility of work and home or managing a practice the same way it's already always been run, I don't think is attractive to every woman across the board. And I think one of the impediments is that if we don't change the way we are running our organizations, its leadership isn't going to be attractive to everybody that perhaps would be a good leader and that would help move our organization along. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the reasons. I know when I started my career at KPMG, I have my own firm now, but I didn't even think partnership was something that I could do. So I think that's also the other side of it is you don't think it's an option. Because the imposter syndrome or you doubt yourself, as Jessica talked about, and you need, someone to give you the support. But also, if I looked around at who the leaders in my firm were, there weren't that many women. There was literally a handful, and they were all in the female type lines of businesses, education and healthcare. They weren't on the manufacturing or in the consulting. They were in those. So not having the role model, not thinking that it was an option, but also looking and saying, I don't know if I want to be that person or I want to strive to do what that person is doing right now. It's not as attractive to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Jackie. Absolutely. You're right. When you come into the public accounting profession and you don't see many people that look like you, you start to, the wheels start to turn there. And then, like you said, how the organization is run, you start to wonder, well, if I do get married, if I do have to become a caregiver or become a mother, I don't think I can do it. I'm not sure how you can do it. I've been in organizations where some of the women in leadership, there aren't many that maybe are married or have children. So you really begin to wonder, how can I get there? Or you say, can I even get there as well? And so I agree with Jackie as well, is organizations need to take a look at what it takes to get to that partnership level. And it doesn't have to be the same path for everyone. I know there's great firms out there that allow for flexible work arrangements or reduced work hours, but still give you that opportunity to move up. And that is needed. It doesn't have to be how it's always been. And if we haven't learned from the pandemic, change needs to happen. Well, if not, you're going to be forced to.
There's a logical way that organizations can do both, right? Offer that career path toward leadership, but still serve the needs of those who don't necessarily aspire to that.
Definitely.
Jackie, tell me a little bit about the work of the Women's Initiatives Executive Committee. So the AICPA's committee there. What's your mission there?
Our mission is to promote and support the success of women to advance the profession together. And really, we changed this a few years ago. And the most important word in that is together. It's not, you know, preaching to the choir. It's not just women huddling in a back corner to, you know, figure out how we're going to overthrow the world. Really what it is working together, males and females, staff people and partners, administrative people, our comparts who are in government and education, that we're figuring out the best way that we can bring women into our profession and retain them. And that was really an important thing that we did, you know, a few years ago. And what we do is we provide resources, and we provide them to the individual level, to the firm or organizational level, and the professional level to help women succeed, or to put programs into place to help the women, our organizations and profession, and succeed. And we talked about sponsorship. We have a kit about sponsorship. And what's really neat about that one is we talk about being a sponsor and having a sponsor. So we're hitting both sides of it. We have coaching, and talks about being a coach and how to be coached. So we hit both parts of it so that everybody can figure out what's the best way to handle this. And also, so people recognize that I may not be a sponsor now, but I could be a sponsor in the future, or I can be a sponsor to someone, you know, behind me in the career. So there's a lot of resources related to that we put out there. And I know Jessica sits on the committee as well, and has helped us develop, you know, a bunch of these things that we have done.
So give me some examples. I mean, how are you getting that word out to people so that we can start building a more inclusive profession? What were some examples of the work that you guys are doing?
So certainly doing something like this, a podcast where I get to reach, you know, a bunch of people in Maryland doing, you know, we usually have a presentation during the Engage session so that we make sure that we're sharing what's going on with the Women's Initiative Executive Committee at that point in time. We do have a global summit, the Women's Global Leadership Summit, that happens each November. This year it's going to be in Dallas, and it will be a hybrid, hopefully a chunk of people in person and then certainly people online, where we talk about all these issues. And we talk about it not only for our emerging leaders, but our existing leaders. And this year, we're going to have a track for our male leaders so that they can come and hear what they can do to improve their organizations and help their women in their organizations.
Well, that's a really good point. I heard you mention that, you know, that there's a role for men to play in all this as well. How do you see that playing out? Normally, conversations about this tend to focus right in on women, right? And what women are doing but what role do men play, and should they be playing?
They certainly should be playing to understand, you know, what the issues are, to understand the business case, the imperative that we talked about at the top of the podcast, to understand why this is important, and also to be an ally and to be a sponsor, to make sure that they are promoting the women in their organization. Because really, every firm member benefits from a firm that can attract great talent and retain that talent within their organizations as well. It's important to do.
Yeah, yeah. Jessica, in addition to your work with the executive committee, you're involved with the MACPAs, the Maryland Association of CPAs, their educational foundation. Tell me a little bit about why you decided that was an important thing for you to do.
Sure. I decided to be involved because of my love and passion for the accounting profession. If anyone follows me on LinkedIn, I'm always posting about the great career opportunities our profession has to offer. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a group of college students just yesterday, sharing my story, my CPA journey, and the opportunities that are ahead of them in our profession, especially with the technology changes that we're seeing. And I'm proud to be on the board of an organization who is committed to a diverse and stronger profession. It is something that I hope has a lasting effect on our profession, especially for the CPAs in Maryland. And with the recent restructuring and a few board meetings that we've had, there's a lot that we want to accomplish, of course. We have a great group of diverse individuals who are all on the same page of, we're going to make the accounting profession stronger, more inclusive, and more diverse. And that anybody that wants to enter our profession can, regardless of their social economic background.
Yeah. How do you want to get there? I mean, what are your hopes for the foundation? What kind of contributions, I mean, would you like to see it make to the profession, not only in Maryland, but beyond?
I hope the foundation and all of its efforts, of course, have a lasting impact for years to come. And as I mentioned before, about anybody that wants to enter the profession, be able to do that. Whether we can help through that through the scholarships that we provide to accounting students, the learning and training opportunities we provide to students to help increase and enrich our pipeline, the work we do with many of our strategic partners and assisting them in their efforts as well, enhancing the profession. The more diversity we have, and we all know this, the more, again, profitable a business is, the more successful an organization is, and more your employees are also more engaged as well. And we hope that the work that we plan to do as part of the foundation will definitely help with all of that.
That's fantastic. Bringing it down to like a personal level, if there's one thing that anybody in this profession, all of us, one thing that we could all do to move the needle, even, you know, just a little bit in this area, what do you think it would be?
I'll take that one first. I'll say we all need to stop making excuses. And I don't mean at the individual level, firm level, organization level, and make solid commitments with action. Whether it's, you know, the excuse, I don't have enough time to mentor someone. We can find time to even mentor just one person. Mm-hmm. Just that one person. The commitment that it takes to improve the retention of diverse individuals. And not just saying, oh, we can't find them. Oh, we don't know where they are. Oh, we don't know where to look. But putting in that true commitment and that true effort to do that and having accountability, and I'm going to keep saying accountability with that as well. So if we all start making excuses of what we can't do or reasons why we can't do it or shouldn't do it, those collective efforts will definitely make a big improvement in this area overall.
Jackie, how about you?
I'd say that if we see something that's not right or doesn't look right, then call it out. So if, say, you know, I'm scheduling a job and I don't see that Jessica's being included on this job, say, why don't we consider including Jessica? Or do you know we have, you know, four gentlemen who went to Boston College on this team? Maybe we need some females from another school. So to really kind of call it out when we see that, because it may be happening subconsciously, unconsciously. So to put it out loud, to put words to it, then people will start to think about when they're making the decisions that perhaps we need to, you know, hire more women, or perhaps we need to change the mix up of the people on this engagement or that this team. And I think that will help tremendously.
This is some great thoughts. I'm kind of curious what each of you, what kind of advice you might give to a young female college student or young professional just getting started in this profession. About anything, one piece of advice would you give her at this point in their career? How about Jessica? Let's start with you.
I've always lived by the motto of I don't live in my comfort zone. Great things aren't accomplished there. And women, at times, we seem to suffer from imposter syndrome more than men. We doubt ourselves more. I've definitely been there and done that. I would tell any young person within the profession, especially the women, when you are comfortable, you're not growing and you're not learning. Mm-hmm. So when someone reaches out to you for an opportunity to work on a high visibility project, don't think of why you can't do it and why you shouldn't. Think about how that would benefit you and how that could help your career. So I would say don't live in that comfort zone.
Love it. Thank you. Jackie.
I'd say be yourself. It takes so much more energy when you're trying to be someone else or trying to act the way you're supposed to do or answer something the way that you're supposed to. Certainly look at other people and, you know, if you know that someone does something really well, you can emulate those things, but really be yourself and everything else will be a little bit easier because you're not expending all this extra energy trying to figure out how you're supposed to be.
Jackie, what does the future of this profession look like to you?
I think that it looks great. And I think that some of it makes me think that way because of everything we've gone through in the past year. We've learned that we can adapt. So many firms and organizations had to pivot on a dime from Friday night to Monday morning, whether they had to move equipment or people. And, you know, a week before that, if any of us had put money that firms would have been able to do that, we would all be poor. Yep. Because we never would have thought that organizations would have been able to do that. And now we have firms that and organizations that have been working differently for a whole year, and they've learned that they can adapt and they can adapt quickly. So now that we know we can face all the challenges, and you guys all talk about that, how much more quickly change comes, I think that we're really ready to face all the changes that are going to come at us more quickly.
Yeah, I think we have learned a little bit of fluidity over the last year, right?
Sure.
Jessica, how about you? What does the future look like to you?
I would say it's full of opportunities. When I talk to college students now and they ask me what courses they should be taking, how technology is playing a role in the profession, I said, I've only been in the career, maybe profession, a little over 10 years, and I knew nothing about data analytics or cybersecurity when I first started. And now the opportunities of how accounting and technology mix and how students are so excited about that. I just want to make sure that all professionals within our kind of professionals within our profession have access to those opportunities. That's what's so important to me. As I mentioned before, our career, our profession can provide a very rewarding career. I'm proud of, you know, what I've accomplished and where I am, and I hope to pull others along. I just want to be able to pull anyone along that wants to come along.
Boy, terrific insights and just a great conversation. Jackie, Jessica, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your time and your thoughts.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Really great talk there. So much to chew on. That was Jacqueline Tracy and Jessica McLean. Jacqueline is a partner with Mandel and Tracy LLC in Providence, Rhode Island. She's also chair of the AICPA's Women's Initiative Executive Committee. Jessica's the controller for Brand USA, and she's also a member of the board of directors of the MACPA Foundation. You can learn so much more by going to macpa.org/foundation and by going to aicpa.org/career. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is all I've got for you this week, gang. Have a great week. We will talk to you again soon.